A little closer look at an organization that should know better. Next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to today's edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute for Principled Policy. And along with me today is our co-host, the Vice Chairman of the Institute, my fellow analyst and very good friend, Chuck Michaels.
Good to be back in studio again, and here's hoping that we can make sense out of a couple of very senseless publications.
Yes, indeed. Now, if you were with us yesterday, ladies and gentlemen, you know that we were giving you a little bit of a constitutional primer, how to read the Constitution correctly, even when others who you may consider to be constitutionally sound are probably not reading it right. No, we're not talking about us, ladies and gentlemen, because I think we are reading the Constitution right. We're talking about the folks over at the New American Magazine, which I know a number of folks in the Liberty and the Tea Party movements tend to read and tend to respect and support, but they published an article on the 3rd of August, last Friday, called House Passes Bill Eliminating Senate Approval of Presidential Appointments. Well, we talked about that bill yesterday. It was Senate Bill 679, the Presidential Appointment Efficiency and Streamlining Act, and we walked you through the Constitution itself and showed you fairly clearly, I hope, and we'll get emails if we didn't, Chuck, fairly clearly the bill, although is unpalatable and potentially problematic in the future, depending on how lazy Congress gets, and we know they can get pretty lazy. But the one thing it wasn't, Charles, was unconstitutional, which is what the claim of the writer, Joe Wolverton, made it out to be in this article, by basically saying that the Senate voted to surrender its constitutional check on the executive, and that every congressman who voted, voted unconstitutionally to neuter the legislative branch. Well, could this neuter the legislative branch? After looking at the specific list of offices that would then be exempted from Senate confirmation, i.e. the advice and consent of the Senate, I don't believe that Congress did much to neuter itself, Chuck. I mean, unless they really, really think that there's going to be a constitutional crisis by appointing the administrator of the Fire Safety Department at Homeland Security. Who knows? Maybe we're just going to have a mass outbreak of fires all over the country. If we don't have a Senate-approved administrator, we may be in trouble. I don't know, but I don't think it's a constitutional crisis in the way that it's being made out. Now, we finished that part up yesterday, but what we didn't get finished up was some of the ancillary or supplemental materials that Mr. Wolverton was using to try to make his case. And Chuck, as we looked in this article, he drew from a couple of different resources. One of the portions that he drew from, and this is not the one that I'm going to take the big brickbat to, but is the Family Research Council, where Tom McCluskey of the FRC was quoted that because they sent a memo to the House members, because this vote was last Tuesday at the end of July, that McCluskey said, quote, "The United States Constitution does not bestow kingly powers on the president to appoint the senior officers of the government with no process." Unquote. Well, I would have to say that Tom McCluskey was absolutely correct, right, Chuck?
Yeah.
But in looking at Senate Bill 679, McCluskey was totally off base because none of these people that were exempted from Senate oversight for their appointments are senior officers of the government. You may say an assistant administrator or a deputy director may be a senior officer, but listen, if we've ever been in a bureaucratic situation, Chuck, and whether in private industry or if we've ever worked in government, you know that they hand out deputy directorships and administrative associates credentials to just about everybody coming through the door.
Well, Barry,
almost everybody's a deputy director of something.
It's like being a bank vice president.
That's right. It's a vice president.
Everybody that works there, if they've been there 6 months, is a vice president.
But you see, this is where I have to really take issue with Wolverton. And I'm sorry, ladies and gentlemen, if you think we're beating somebody who can't defend themselves. But he did try to defend himself in his own writing in his article. And he said this, although McCluskey's reading of the Constitution is accurate, and it was, but not in relation to the issue he was discussing, as of Tuesday, it is no longer the law of the land. Chuck, about as close to saying that they threw off all Senate appointment authority whatsoever.
Well, that's right. And that's exactly what this article, unfortunately, is attempting to imply.
Yes, it is.
And that's why I said it's hyperbolic. And really, I still don't know if the author understands that or whether this is an attempt to gin up support for a repeal effort. Now, here's the problem, Barry. It's already been passed and it's already been sent to the president. You really think Obama's not going to sign this thing?
Well, of course he's going to sign it. The thing is, Chuck, though, and I can go back and do the research if our listeners really want me to, the vast majority of these offices, he's already nominated somebody for. It's just because the Senate hasn't taken up nominations to hear them in these. But this doesn't stop any of the major nominations from being heard, the Supreme Court or actual cabinet heads. But this is a backlog because sometimes the Senate, in their hurry to pass a budget, well, wait a minute, we haven't had a budget in 3 years in the Senate, have we? Folks, Senate really under Harry Reid hasn't gotten much done at all. Even to the fact that they had to have one of their own Democrat majority members, Chuck Schumer, introduce this bill to say, can we just let some of these things go through? Do we have to sit here and have hearings on all this? Now, Wolverton keeps going with this hyperbole, Chuck. Then later on, I kind of figure out where he gets a lot of his hyperbole from. He says this in his article. As soon as President Obama adds his signature to the bill, get this, the checks and balances established by our founding fathers as a protection against tyranny will be eliminated, as well as the concept of enumerated powers. Huh? How in the world did you jump to that startling conclusion from the text of Senate Bill 679, which I have read, Charles, and you and I both have reviewed, and we've reviewed the constitutional provisions behind it, and we've looked at Article 2, Section 2, and talked about it yesterday on this program. I've really got to say, I'm extremely disappointed in Joe Wolverton II, who is one of the staff writers for the New American magazine and their website, because, Chuck, this is irresponsible journalism.
Yes, it is. It's terribly irresponsible. Well, one wonders what someone who you and I are both Facebook friends with, I know that William Norman Grigg would not be happy with this, but I don't think he would have made this mistake.
Well, no, probably not. But even so, this is a situation where if you really want to lose credibility as an organization that stands on constitutional frameworks, just do it exactly the way Joe Wolverton's doing it in this article, which is overblowing the case, making sweeping statements without really any actual or constitutional basis to back them up, and putting it out there, and then quoting some folks who actually, and this is where my brickbat's coming out, Chuck, do it more egregiously than you do. Because Joe Wolverton quotes, ladies and gentlemen, from the Heritage Foundation. Now, I know many of our listeners out there think Heritage is such a wonderful and great organization, and in many ways, they probably are. But when it comes to constitutional interpretation, ladies and gentlemen, let me say that I'll be charitable. I'm a little nonplussed as to their level of expertise of reading the Constitution as it's written. And Chuck, you know what I mean by that. This is coming from an organization who sent one of their chief spokespeople to last year's We the People convention in Columbus, who got up in front of a crowded room and basically said that the nation of the laws of nature and of nature's God is actually Greek and Roman.
Yeah, it's Greek and Roman philosophy. And when people confronted him in the audience, who knew better, anyone who knows anything about Blackstone and Locke, either one, knows that the law of nature is the law written on men's hearts, which Blackstone and Locke state explicitly, and the law of nature's God is the revealed law in the Bible. And this fellow insisted that it had to be Greek philosophy, and he continued to insist even when people stated specifically that you are flying in the face of Locke and Blackstone. Frankly, he didn't care. This was his method of, well, this was his evangelical method of selling constitutionalism, and he was going to stick to it no matter what.
Exactly.
Which should tell you something about this individual.
Now, it's interesting because when Wolverton quotes from this article from the Heritage Foundation on heritage.org, that they wrote actually when this bill was first introduced, they wanted to speed up the nomination and confirmation process. Heritage thinks that's a great idea, but they didn't want this bill to be enacted. Now, Chuck, I'm going to give a little bit of kudo because in a couple of paragraphs in the article, Heritage did lay out an actual legitimate frame for what the founders were actually thinking. They said the framers of the Constitution didn't give the president the kingly power to appoint the senior officers of the government by himself. Instead, they allowed the president to name an individual for a senior office, but then required the president to obtain the Senate's consent before appointing the individual to office. Thus, they required the cooperation of the president and the Senate to put someone in high office. Then it goes on, many of the framers had practical experience with government and recognized that not every office would be of sufficient authority and consequence as to merit the attention of both the president and the Senate to an appointment to the office. Therefore, they provided a means, and we see that means in Article 2, Section 2 of the Constitution spelled out, by which the Congress, by law, could decide which of the lesser offices of government could be filled by the president alone, a court, or a department head. In other words, those three areas are where offices can be filled if Congress, by law, chooses to do so.
And reading this, you have to wonder how closely Wolverton read this article that he quoted from.
I'm not sure he read it very carefully at all, because then they go down here in Heritage's argument for how we should really do it. And they say that Congress should not reduce the number of Senate-confirmed appointments as a means of dealing with its cumbersome and inefficient internal process for considering nominations. Doing so gives away Senate influence over a number of significant appointments, does nothing to improve the Senate process, and still leaves nominees whose office require nomination mired in the Senate process. Well, we've just said that these are not significant appointments to begin with. It would improve the process by clearing out backlog, and obviously would get things moving for those more important ones to actually get through the process. Now, they keep going, and this is Heritage now, being quoted by Wolverton, "The proper solution to the problem of a slow Senate is to speed up the Senate rather than to diminish the role of the Senate. The Senate should look inward and streamline its internal procedures for considering all nominations." And here's the kicker, Chuck, and this is where my brickbat comes out on Heritage. "The proper solution is also the faster one, as the Senate can accomplish the solution by acting on its own in the exercise of its power to make Senate rules, while Senate 679 requires approval by both houses of Congress." Now, Chuck, as far as I know, the Senate cannot, in their rulemaking power in Article 1, make a rule to determine whether or not they can hear appointments. That's spelled out specifically in Article 2, Section 2, and it says that they must do so by law, not by rule, if they want to get out from under it. And to do so by law means that it takes both the Senate and the House of Representatives passing a piece of legislation.
I'm going to take a slightly different tack on the interpretation of this article.
Okay, far away.
I think that what they're saying is that the internal mechanism for doing the hearings for appointments is too cumbersome.
Well, that could very well
and what
be.
And what they want the Senate to do is say, okay, we can streamline internally how we get these hearings done. Because remember, the whole mechanism is cumbersome because the executive department, in order to not embarrass itself, normally has people go through a background check before they're appointed so that there's no gotchas when they get into a Senate hearing. I think the timing on this whole mess is curious, just to get off on a tangent for a second, because of this stuff going on with Huma Abedin, who is Hillary Clinton's assistant, and she has very close ties to the Muslim Brotherhood. All this stuff that's come out with McCain and McConnell and all this coming out and attacking some members of the House who are unhappy with the way that her vetting was done, it coincides with the signing of this bill, and I find that very curious. I think the Heritage Foundation is simply saying here that there are ways to do this in a much more quick method. But let's look at what the real problem is, Barry. Because it's done like bank vice presidents, they must have a list of hundreds, if not thousands, of people that they have to go through these votes on.
Yes.
To get appointments through, and I understand that's the problem. How do you deal with that? Okay, let's cut the size of the bureaucracy. Why do we need these hundreds and thousands of undersecretaries and managers and assistant managers in these departments? The fact is, the departments are too big. They've got too much responsibility. And the way to handle it is not to simply let the president run roughshod and appoint anybody he wants to these positions. It's a worse solution to a bad problem.
I'll grant you that there are better solutions, but I'd also grant that I don't want to imply in any way or give an idea that it's okay for them to decide by rule which offices they're going to give consent to and which ones are just going to rubber stamp and pass over.
No, let me make clear that the entire Senate has to give consent.
Yes, absolutely.
Period. That's what the Constitution says. They can't simply set up a committee and say, okay, if the committee passes, you're through.
Right, because then it becomes a production line, and then it's a favoritism of who gets on the particular committee.
And I wouldn't be a bit surprised. It's not an implication in the article, but somebody's thinking along that line, I would guess.
I wouldn't doubt it a bit. It comes right down to it, Chuck. Our founders did provide, in Article 2, Section 2, a pressure release valve, if you will.
Exactly.
Knowing that there are offices that it just doesn't make a whole lot of sense to have to go through that whole process when you're dealing with the assistant to the assistant to the janitor, or whatever it might be. They did consider them officers of the United States, as is spelled out in Article 2, Section 2, but then they used the word that they didn't use in the first clause, the inferior officers. In other words, they understood, hey, high officials, we got to have the process. We're going to spell out which high officials those are. And all other ones, if they're remotely mentioned in the rest of this document, you got to do this. But those inferior officers, those underlings to the underlings, no, if Congress decides by law that they want to just invest that authority in one body, they're not doing anything wrong. And that's what we get down to, Chuck, because neither Heritage Foundation back last year, nor the Family Research Council, nor the New American have seen or understood that this bill is actually staying within its constitutional parameter.
Exactly. Exactly.
And that's what worries me, Charles, because when you got conservative, and I'm using it in quotes, conservative organizations out there who can't read the Constitution plainly and have got people up in arms saying, well, when did they just amend the Constitution? And there goes our rights. And whereas Wolverton says, and I again think that he's very much being incendiary, killing the checks and balances established by our founding fathers and eliminating the concept of enumerated powers. Chuck, that's irresponsible academic scholarship. It's irresponsible constitutional analysis, and it's irresponsible journalism.
Join us again tomorrow for another Principles and Policies.